One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Do you know a student getting ready to go to college? Or are you looking at going back to school yourself? The Woodward Hines Education Foundation and the Get to College program help more Mississippians get to and through college to get certificates and degrees that lead to meaningful employment. They offer free college planning advice, including hands-on FAFSA completion assistance through in-person or virtual appointments. Visit gettocollege.org to learn more.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Tuesday, April 30th. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, a bill heading to the governor's desk could delay expanding police presence within the capital city. Water utilities in the South are notorious for poor customer service, leaving customers trying for months to fix inaccurate bills. A report from the Gulf States newsroom ahead, plus what a new education funding formula could mean for Mississippi students. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. Lawmakers in Mississippi vote to delay a law to expand the jurisdiction of Capitol Police in Jackson. The Capitol Complex Improvement District is an area created in 2017 to police immediate places around state-owned buildings downtown. A law passed in 2023 expands their jurisdiction this summer to include much of the northeast portion of Jackson, which is a majority white affluent district. If House Bill 1487 is signed by the governor, it would delay that change for at least another year. House Republican Chris Zuber of Ocean Springs presented the final version of the bill and shares details with our Will Stribling.
The effectiveness of the CCID, which is mainly concerning law enforcement right now, has had a tremendous impact on the present boundaries. As I understand it and appreciate it, all of the crime statistics are in a downward trend. But as I mentioned to the members of the House, and as you personally heard, that's just a small piece of the puzzle. There's a lot more to it, especially whenever you start talking about West and South Jackson, than just expanding the CCID. So hopefully we can have some committee meetings and hearings over the summer, and we can get the Jackson delegation, we can get all of the parties of interest, and try to get on the same page for a long-term strategic plan for areas of Jackson that are outside of the CCID. I think that's extremely important. And like I said, the CCID is a piece of the puzzle, but it's just one piece.
What does that look like? What does the rest of the puzzle look like?
Well, I think that looks like the following. Number one, some of the dilapidated homes and properties, we need to try to speed up that process or maybe streamline that process to make repairs to the homes or demolish those homes, turn them into green space, see how many of those properties have been tax forfeited to the state. And like I mentioned on the floor, kind of look at Jackson State, the airport, and the zoo as anchors to maybe some type of redevelopment authority where we can match local money with grants and, you know, take it to the next level. Because like I said, over the weekend, I personally drove around West Jackson and South Jackson, and it's beautiful in terms of just the sheer trees and the streets and the older homes and the schools. It's got a lot of potential, and the sky is the limit if we can get city, county, and state government on the same page.
Some of your Democratic colleagues voiced frustration with this bill this morning. I know that has been a part of the CCID conversation the whole time. A lot of that frustration was just around the unelected judges. Talk a bit about how sensational, politicized nature of this conversation has affected these conversations and the ability to move forward on some of these issues?
That's two questions or two issues. Number one, I would respectfully disagree with your premise concerning the expansion and there being opposition to it. You heard the debate. You heard the questions and the comments made by the members of the Jackson delegation. I think every single one of the members who stood up, if I'm not mistaken, was in favor of having his or her district included in the CCID. So I don't think there's a lot of opposition like there was in the beginning. As a matter of fact, I don't think there was one member of the Jackson delegation that stood up and expressed any opinion or opposition that they did not want the CCID to cover their specific House district. And your other issue or question was concerning the effectiveness of the Capitol Police. There were some complaints. We'll be happy to look at those, and I'm sure the commissioner has. And the commissioner, I can tell you, is a person who, if something needs to be changed, he doesn't mind making those changes.
During floor discussion of the bill, some Jackson lawmakers criticized the changes being made to the district in recent years. House Democrat Chris Bell of Jackson introduced the original 2016 law that created the CCID. He asks why it's only being expanded into majority white neighborhoods.
The emphasis of it was not to create a Frankenstein or a monster, which it has morphed into now. It was to be able to provide the city of Jackson with extra funds to do street repairs and things of that nature on properties that are not owned by the government, by the state of Mississippi. Since that has occurred, this bill has passed. It has turned into, again, like I said, Frankenstein, because now you have the Capitol Police, whose jurisdiction was expanded today to go further north into the more affluent areas of the city of Jackson, to where more opportunities for investment would go, more opportunities for dollars to be put in those areas, paving streets and things of that nature. But there's no help for the city of Jackson as a whole. When we asked the state of Mississippi to help the city of Jackson years ago, even before I got here, it has been no, 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 no. And you can go down and look at every appropriation bill that has been introduced by members of Hinds County, as well as Ways and Means and general bills. The attitude of the state of Mississippi and its leadership has always been screw the city of Jackson, from efforts of trying to take over the airport, efforts most recently to take over the water system, even after we received the $600 million from the federal government, thanks to Congressman Thompson. They devised a plan, someone that doesn't even live in Jackson or Hinds County, to try to take over the water system. And that's been the attitude of this body.
Representative Zuber said that this expansion of CCID is just a piece of the puzzle. In a conversation with me a few minutes ago, he said that he wants there to be hearings and discussion, you know, collaboration between state, city, and local leaders in terms of lawmakers providing matching funds to help with the development issues in South and West Jackson. Do you find that credible, or is it a, you know, I'll see it when I see it type thing in your mind?
Yeah, it's lip service. It's just to pass the time away to give some of the members at ease to think that they'll be a part of the process, and we won't be a part of the process. Those same individuals that got up and talked and spoke today from Hinds County, with the exception of our newest member, have all had conversations on how to expand the CCID in their districts. They've had conversations where they wanted the Capitol Police to provide extra protection in their districts, and they have all been denied. I am no fan of the expansion of the CCID, and make that very clear. I am not. I understand the Capitol Police provides extra protection, but it's a better way to do it. And this CCID, like I said, is a monster, because you are now having two cities in one. And it has turned into something that I am afraid that down the line is going to be anarchy with respect to the residents who live in South and West Jackson, seeing what all the development and all of how everyone else's roads are paid, but everything west of it, problem, and that's not good.
That's House Democrat Chris Bell of Jackson. Coming up, weather utilities, or rather water utilities in the South, are known for poor customer service, leaving customers trying for months to fix inaccurate bills. The Gulf States Newsroom has the Bill of the Month report next. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Our goal at Everyday Tech is to keep your technology not only working, but working for you. I'm the host, Abram Naney, and you can join me and my friends Wednesday mornings at 10 on MPB Think Radio, or search Everyday Tech on your favorite podcasting app, or download the MPB Public Media app.
What's your favorite type of music? The old standards? Country? A specific type of jazz? Maybe you love classical. In addition to Think and Radio Reading Service, we broadcast MPB Music Radio. Listen live to essential and emerging artists from your HD radio, our app, or from mpbonline.org.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. One of the most expensive parts of your water bill can be the sewage fees. That can be frustrating, especially when you don't have a sewer. That's the case for April's utility bill of the month. Stephen Basaha of the Gulf States Newsroom went to a New Orleans community garden fighting for years to fix their bills.
Look, when you're running a garden, rain barrels like this one are all well and good. But dry stretches meant Lizzie Stewart still had to drag gallons of water back and forth in her Toyota.
And then we got the hose, like it was a game changer.
Stewart opened up the Galvez garden back in 2021. At the time, it was just an empty plot of land. She now grows tomatoes, lettuce, and other veggies for her neighbors like Bernesta Simmons.
I ain't never had lettuce with the red stem and the orange stem. And I cut it up with the green onions and brought some eggs. Boy, I had the whole house fresh. It was good. It was delicious. It was healthy, too.
Getting the New Orleans Sewage and Water Board to install a connection for a hose about 2 years ago made the whole thing easier. But right away, something was clearly off with Stewart's bills.
Like, I think the highest bill we ever had was $5. So it's like this, our first bill for...
This is your first bill right here?
Uh-huh. $161.19.
Wait, hold on. I thought you said $5 of usage was the most.
And my water usage was $1.16.
But your bill was $161.
Yes.
Okay, let's break that down. $100 was for a one-time deposit, not really an issue. Then there's just over a buck for the actual water usage. And the other $60, those mostly were fees for things like trash pickup and sewage. But remember, this is a garden. There are no trash cans to pick up and no sewer. Clearly, this was a mistake. The trash charge, Stewart was able to get removed relatively quickly. But the sewage fees, that took more calling.
Like a crazy person, that would be my thing. I would just call once a week, and sometimes you would be on hold for like 3 hours, and then the phone would just drop. I mean, it's super aggravating.
What she really needed was for the Sewage and Water Board to mark her account as an irrigation account. Water for, you know, just watering. No sewage fees needed. At one point, the word irrigation was added to her account as the name of her street, North Galvez Irrigation Street. Sewage fees still there.
Originally, I was like, we're making progress. This is going to get resolved. And then as the months passed, it just became like a slap in the face.
And those months became years. Now, the Sewage and Water Board did not comment for this story. But water experts say this kind of unhelpful customer service is actually common from water providers. These utilities have some serious challenges to deal with, like aging infrastructure and the impact of climate change. And they're often short on the revenue they need to address it all. So customer service tends to fall by the wayside. But utilities letting issues like Stewart's go on for years while sending bills is like another bad idea.
If you're calling your mom and asking for money, and that's the only reason you ever call, she's going to get less and less likely to help you out over time.
That's Alexandra Campbell-Ferrari. She's the executive director of the Center for Water Security and Cooperation.
Same with the utilities. The customers are going to get more and more annoyed with issues or challenges or rate increases if the only time they ever hear from their utility is when there's a rate increase, a bill, or an emergency.
And those customers are more likely to fight back when the utility tries to raise its rates to pay for those other challenges. As for gardener Lizzie Stewart, after 2 years of fighting her bills, she got one with some good news.
I got an adjustment with a balance forward of $646.96.
Enough to cover 4.5 years of water by her math.
It's water away.
Water away, yeah.
Still, she's holding on to that bill as evidence, because at this point, she doesn't have much faith in her utility. For the Gulf States Newsroom, I'm Stephen Basaha.
To share your own utility bill story with the Gulf States Newsroom, visit mpbonline.org and search for Utility Bill of the Month. The Gulf States Newsroom is a partnership between Mississippi Public Broadcasting and public radio stations in Alabama and Louisiana. Next, what a new education funding formula could mean for students in Mississippi. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
I'm guessing that MPB Think Radio is the number one preset on your radio and you listen all the time. But if you need some unplugged listening suggestions, try a binge of one of our podcasts. Our weekend shows, This American Life and Radio Lab, are great to have downloaded for when you're traveling or at the beach. Don't forget about our local shows, Now You're Talking and Creature Comforts are terrific experiences anytime. MPB Podcasts, for your listening pleasure, anywhere.
Mississippi Antique Showcase is coming to Natchez, Mississippi, Friday, May 3rd and Saturday, May 4th. We'll have professional appraisers on site evaluating antiques, furniture, and treasured keepsakes. For a one-time gift of $100, you'll receive one ticket, complimentary food, cocktails, and a single item appraisal. Call 1-844-874-6874 or go to mpbonline.org to reserve your spot now.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Mississippi's governor is considering a bill that would rewrite the state's education funding formula. This topic has been highly debated throughout the 2024 legislative session. Lawmakers finally reached a compromise over the weekend. The measure's called the Mississippi Student Funding Formula. While some groups for public education strongly support a new formula, others are cautious and call for more scrutiny of these new proposals. Our Micah McEwen speaks with Nancy Loom, executive director of the Parents Campaign, about what this new formula could mean for Mississippi students.
We, the Parents Campaign and other education associations, have been encouraging legislators to make sure that any plan that replaced the MAEP would use an objective formula to determine what we call the base student cost. And that is the per-student cost to educate a typical child that doesn't have any extenuating circumstances that would require additional resources to make sure that that child is getting everything that he or she needs. The bill that was passed, House Bill 4130, does that. It uses an objective formula for the base cost, and then there is additional funding for school districts that have students with additional needs. And all of this is very much like what the MAEP had. The MAEP also had an objective formula for the base cost, and it also had additional funding for other circumstances that increase the cost of education. The new formula, which is called the Mississippi Student Funding Formula, has more funding for those extra needs. We're talking about things like poverty, special education, gifted education, transportation for districts that are sparsely populated, where they have to travel a long way to pick up students on buses, those sorts of things that increase the cost of education. So this new formula puts more funding into those extenuating circumstances or additional funding needs. But it does also provide a little less for each typical student. So we strongly support the idea of the objective formula. We strongly support having additional resources for things like poverty and special education and English language learners and that sort of thing. We're a little concerned about the fact that this was passed through very quickly at the end of the session without public hearings without testimony from experts or much examination by experts of the new formula. And so we're very pleased that the law does require the Department of Education to review this formula over the next few months and to present to the legislature sort of an analysis of the formula and any recommendations they have for ways that it needs to be tweaked or improved to make sure that it funds students appropriately.
Where do you place this effort that's included within HB 4130 on the timeline of public school funding in Mississippi? Did it just kind of come out of nowhere at the end of the session? Has it been moving in this direction for several years? Where do you place that?
Well, there's been talk for a while of updating the Mississippi Adequate Education Program. There was an effort to replace it back in 2017 and 2018, although that effort did not use an objective formula. There were all kinds of problems with it. It would have meant a tremendous decrease in the state's obligation to public schools. So that effort was defeated. Then the Senate has proposed for 2 years in a row some updates to the formula to increase the equity component. And then this year there were proposals both by the House and the Senate. So we've kind of been moving in this direction, and deliberation is good. I think the process would have been better had we had public hearings and that sort of thing, but that's not what we got at the end of the day. But we are pleased, again, that this final product does include the essential elements that education associations had urged the legislature to include in any rewrite of the formula, things like an objective formula for the base cost, an inflation factor to make sure we keep up with rising costs of education, an equity component, and then the additional funding for circumstances that increase the cost of education.
So I'm reading the text of it here, and I see that education funding would be allowed to remain level in years in which the state's revenue decreases or remains stable, even if that's related to a proposed tax cut. Do you have any concerns with that? Am I understanding the text of that correctly?
Yes, we do have a concern with that, and that's one of the things that we reported to our members that we're concerned about. My understanding is that in a review of recent history with school funding and with revenue, year over year, we have not to date seen decreases in state revenue related to the tax cuts, that we have seen slower growth, but that we haven't actually seen revenue go backwards. And so hopefully that will continue. But I can tell you that as public education advocates, we will continue to urge the legislature to fully fund education. This is this legislature's formula, and we hope that they will fully fund it. You know, even when revenue declines, the cost of education doesn't. And our children deserve a quality education, and we should all want our children to have a quality education so that we will have a well-educated citizenry and workforce. Certainly, if we enter a recession or have consequences from the economy that result in decreased revenue, it's understandable that perhaps there might be a year when the formula couldn't be fully funded. But if that is the result of the legislature's own actions, such as tax cuts, I feel strongly that the legislature has an obligation to our children to provide them a quality education, and they need to consider those costs when they consider tax cuts and the implications of tax cuts for our economy and for their obligations to taxpayers and to our children.
Nancy Loam is executive director of the Parents Campaign, a nonprofit public education group based in Jackson. This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.